Jersey. Thursday, it's March 31st. This is the I Own College Basketball Podcast. I got Matt Norlander with me. I got Sam Bassini with me. It is the week of the Final Four. We are in Houston for the Final Four. Bassini, do you have Final Four fever yet? Are you overrun with Final Four fever?
What is Final Four fever?
I don't know. It seems like something somebody would say somewhere, though.
It sounds like alliteration to me.
Do you have Final Four fever or not? It was a simple question.
Oh yes, I'm thrilled. I'm ready to be here at the Final Four. It is lovely in Houston right now. I'm not sure I've seen more clouds in the sky over the last year, given that I live in Los Angeles.
The guy from Southern California complaining about Houston, Texas. I could have predicted this, Norlander.
Without a doubt. I mean, come on. By the way, I'm just sick. I'm overrun with Final Four fever right now.
Hashtag Final Four fever.
Well, you know, I don't know if we need to go that far, but sure.
The only thing that would make this better if two pros and a Plumlee were here.
I know it's a damn shame, but it is.
Let's bring that up. sore spot, you know.
It does feel good to be down here. We've already seen plenty of coaches. Coach's hotel is already kind of ridiculous and overrun. I couldn't believe how busy it was actually in this city last night, because usually we get in on Wednesday and there's people, but it seemed way busier than I expected. So I'm sure the next couple of nights will get pretty outrageous.
Yeah, well, last night got outrageous. Let's not lie to each other. It felt outrageous to me. It felt outrageous when I woke up this morning.
Yeah, I know. I left you and I was like, I wonder when that man is going to go to bed. And I think by the tones of our voices, we all know. But hey, it really, like, this is this should be pretty cool, pretty fun. You know, four great coaches in the Final Four, and we got media stuff coming up later today. And I'm pretty excited, man. I'm getting the feeling that as we get closer to game time, people aren't as all about Carolina, like, necessarily being like the overwhelming favorite. And as someone who picked Oklahoma at the start of the tournament, I agree with that as well. But we'll see how these players and teams are acting. It's always interesting to see if the guys are loose, you know, the players themselves. It's such a big event, it's so different from even the previous two weekends in the tournament. By the time you get to the Final Four, just the grand stage of it all, I could see it. You know, sometimes it's a little bit intimidating for some players and other teams. You know, they just, like, Wisconsin last year was like the loosest team in the history of the tournament. Ultimately, that didn't end up mattering because they didn't win, but, you know, certainly they were able to knock off Kentucky.
I feel like I'm going to be loose. I feel good about it. I've been here before.
So, yes, you have.
Yeah, so yeah. I don't feel like there's anything to be uptight about. I'm just going to try to enjoy the experience. And we are headed to the arena soon, which is that's the biggest issue with Houston, is that the dome isn't downtown. We're downtown. The dome isn't downtown. And that's why I think it was our buddy Greg Doyle who wrote last year, you know, we should just do this in Indianapolis every year. Like, I really do believe that. Indianapolis is a perfect setup. I'm fine with New Orleans as well. I'm actually fine with St. Louis as well. But you need the restaurants, hotels, bars, and dome to all be within walking distance. And that is not what you get in Houston. Like, I have to go catch a ride to the dome. That's ridiculous.
Hashtag catch a ride to the dome.
Catch a ride to the dome. Nobody should have to catch a ride to the dome. You should walk to the dome.
I know. It is very spread out. I wonder, you know, just kind of thinking out loud here, if Houston will ever get a Final Four again, because San Antonio is back in the mix. Dallas has, you know, Jerry's World, and that's not the greatest spot either, to be honest with you.
No,
there's plenty of stuff spread out there. But when you've got these three competing cities and, like, Houston is just so spread out, I don't know. I don't know if this will be the last time for a couple of decades, or if it'll get in the mix again. It's okay. Like, there's nothing against Houston. It's the fourth biggest city. They say it'll overtake Chicago by like 2020 in terms of population. And, you know, it's actually the most air conditioned city in America. I'm learning all these amazing Houston facts, but like,
how do you even know?
Hashtag Houston facts.
That's right. How do I know this? Actually, I have a friend who is a reporter down here, so she has informed me plenty.
Whoa.
And, but no, when, like, you've got San Antonio, New Orleans, Indianapolis, these very walkable cities, St. Louis, which had it in the past, it does make it a lot, you know, just from a logistics standpoint, you know? Like I want to go see Kendrick Lamar on Saturday, and I don't know, like, how far that is from the dome, you know? Do you remember, GP, when we went to New Orleans, 2012, it was you, me, and Pablo Torre, and we
saw... Shout out to Pablo Torre.
And we saw Black Keys, and Pablo like sweat through his entire suit and had to go to the Final Four that night.
I do remember.
But like that, you know, that was. But it was at least it was walkable. But I don't know where this this Kendrick thing's going down. It's, and are you going with me, GP? Sam, I know you're going.
Well, here's the problem. Can we go? When is it?
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Like, is it during the games or is it?
I don't think so. I think that I don't think they have the concerts compete with the games. But that is the question because I think Kendrick is the last one to perform on Saturday, because I think Maroon 5, Sam's favorite band, is the headliner on Sunday, and then Fall Out Boy is I think the headliner on Friday. But Kendrick's the only one that I want to see. And
me
so
too.
The NCAA, they redeemed themselves with this at the last minute, somehow booking him. So that's the only one I have any sort of vested interest in seeing.
Well, Norlander, you're the one with the Houston friend. Can you, like, figure out what time Kendrick Lamar plays?
I'm going to find that out by the end of the day.
Okay. If we can go, we're going to go. That'd be my answer. If it's possible to go, we're going, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, absolutely. So the games are Saturday. And the first one, of course, is Villanova, Oklahoma, followed by North Carolina, Syracuse. Villanova fans, they were greatly offended by the last podcast because we didn't discuss them enough. Norlander, anything you want to say about Villanova?
Yeah, sure. I got no problem giving. I could have just played that off and been like, "Now let's just move on to Oklahoma." But
they feel like the part of the podcast where I said, "Listen, Syracuse winning is an unbelievable story because it's Jim Boeheim being Hall of Famer, being suspended. They'd be the first double digit seed ever to do it." Blah blah blah. And then I said, "North Carolina, like North Carolina's easy. Roy Williams." Hall of Fame coach, preseason number one, won the ACC regular season title, ACC tournament title, got a one seed in the tournament, now would have a chance to win the national championship, could win the national championship. If they do it, they'd be only the fifth team in history to be preseason number one, win the league title, win the league tournament title, and then win the national championship, right? So that's a great story. Oklahoma, it's Buddy Hield. Get out of my face. That's a great story. Buddy might be the best story. And then with Villanova, we were like, yeah, Villanova's like, that'd mean a lot to Villanova. It means a lot to Jay, but like I don't really know. I don't know how that story resonates nationally. And Villanova fans, they take that as a slap in the face. They felt like we slapped their Wildcat faces. So, Norlander, sell me on Villanova. Tell me why I will be there on Monday night. Villanova wins the national championship, and I'll go. This is going to be something we'll remember forever.
Well, I mean, that is not a promise that I can keep. Now, if the game is interesting, there's certainly a decent possibility of that. I will say it will not surprise me if Villanova wins. In fact, I picked Oklahoma at the start of the tournament, so I'm sticking with that. But I would go Oklahoma 1, Villanova 2 in terms of teams that I would feel most comfortable picking. I think Villanova would have a fantastic chance at beating North Carolina. I think the reason why they're not as enticing of a story is they have no first-round picks on their team. I mean, I enjoy watching them, and I've been saying for a while that they're really, really good, fantastic. And but I just, you know, they don't have a college superstar. Ryan Arcidiacono's a really good player, but, you know, outside of that city and the league, he doesn't have any sort of transcending appeal the way that Buddy Hield does, you know? But listen, I got nothing against Villanova. I've been the guy who's been saying that this is like a top four team in college basketball across the past 3 years, and I put them in the Final Four. So I have nothing but love, and I can't wait for that game. I think it has a very good chance of being a good game. In my opinion, it should be the second game. It shouldn't be the first game.
Well, that's why you don't run a television network, Norlander. Because
you know what? You're right. I don't run a television network.
Breaking news: Norlander does not run a television network. You know what? Here's let me give you some inside info.
Sure.
Inside television info. Losing Virginia and replacing it with Syracuse, that's a positive for television.
Yes.
Even though Virginia was the one seed, the executives at TBS. I can tell you that they do not mind losing a one seed and replacing it with Syracuse. Syracuse is a much bigger brand and a much better option for television purposes. So when you get North Carolina and Syracuse, it doesn't matter the records, it doesn't matter the seeds. That is the prime. That's the game that'll rate better for television purposes.
No, I do wonder if the idea that it's both ACC, two ACC games, does play in a bit to make that a bit less appealing. just because it's, but again, it's, I guess it's not in the same locale, you know, it's not in the same area of the country. Syracuse is northeast, North Carolina, southeast. Maybe that helps, I guess. But then again, there aren't really any Western teams, so you're not going to get that major spread throughout the country. So it's, I agree with you. I would say that Syracuse, North Carolina is the marquee matchup for TV purposes. I mean, Virginia just doesn't help anyone there.
Right. And you know what? I believe North Carolina would have been the primetime, the big game no matter what. Like North Carolina
probably,
could play,
yeah.
North Carolina could have played anybody. North Carolina, just North Carolina simply being North Carolina trumps anything else for television purposes. But
yeah.
But the game I'm looking most forward to is Oklahoma Villanova. I think from a basketball fan's perspective, Oklahoma Villanova is the more interesting matchup. From a television, like let's get eyeballs perspective, it's North Carolina Syracuse, and I won't be surprised either if Villanova wins. In fact, Villanova's favored. Nobody by definition should be surprised if Villanova wins. And listen, if they win the whole thing, it'll be a tremendous story. The only point I think we were trying to make, I don't want to speak for you guys, the only point I was trying to make was that there's this very easily attachable narrative to every other story. And with Villanova, it's like, wow, that's neat. Villanova won the national championship. But like, okay, where is it from there? But perhaps the idea that they were able to win it without first-round draft picks. They were able to win it with guys who were recruited to be four-year players and have mostly become four-year players. And perhaps that's the story, you know? Like,
I
mean,
I would say that winning a title certainly it enters you into a certain club here, and Jay Wright's considered like a top 20 coach in the sport. So if he can get a title, that's obviously a pretty huge moment for him. And it will be Villanova will not only just have that one crazy underdog story from 85 when, you know, Massimino won it. That's pretty much the biggest, you know, thing that's attached to that program, I feel. So I think that there are the good stories to come from Villanova, like no doubt about it. And, you know, Wright's reputation and legacy will obviously be lifted. Like, once you win that title, man, things change a lot, and that would be a really cool and good thing for him.
Did you guys read the Washington Post story on Roy Williams?
I'm so happy you brought that up, because I was going to shoehorn it into this podcast, because I think we should actually absolutely discuss it. I did read it by a good writer who I actually talked and hung out with in Chicago, Kent Babb.
Oh, I talked and hung out with somebody from the Washington Post.
Yeah, it's called... GP, do not even try and give me flack about name-dropping on this podcast. Guy tweeted at us and said, you guys should start a drinking game whenever Parrish Humble brags. You'd be drunk by the end. So don't even go there.
This dude, but no, dude's already dropped Pablo. He's dropped
Kent Babb.
Anybody else you know you'd like to share with us, Norlander?
No, I'm okay. But right. The point is, Kent Babb is just a cool, low key dude, really talented writer, and Roy Williams is kind of losing his stuff over this. This isn't the first time this season that Roy Williams has taken time out of his, you know, media responsibilities to go after a media personality. Obviously, you know, someone misconveyed what Doug Gottlieb had said on a TV show earlier this year about Roy stepping down, and Roy, you know, took a shot at Gottlieb for putting his shorts on backwards while he was at Oklahoma State. I think that's totally fair. But now you've got Roy basically saying, if me and my friends saw that guy in the street, it would get ugly, which the vision alone, by the way, of Roy Williams and his 60-something colleagues running into Kent Babb on the street and getting into some sort of scuffle like it's West Side Story is entertaining enough. But there is something behind, like, I don't know.
Can you imagine Williams and his 60-year-old buddies beating up a reporter from the Washington Post? How good would that be?
It would be the story of the year.
He legit threatened him. Like, he basically was like, hey, we bumping into this guy walking around the Final Four. It's going down for real.
It's going down for real. I don't know. There's something with Roy. Like, he's gotten a little defensive. I like to see the edge from him, but the story itself isn't even that bad.
So I didn't read it, like, when it was posted. I just missed it. I don't know how or why. I just missed it. And so then I saw Roy's comments about it, and I said, ooh, what happened here? And I went back and read it, and I was like, what's the big deal? Like what? Yeah. Like what? Why are you mad about this? I didn't understand why I was mad about that. Like, what was so bad about the story, other than it painted, I think, a fairly accurate picture of what Roy's going through?
You're right. I don't get it.
I didn't get it either. I was expecting to read something like, you know,
inflammatory. And angry.
Yeah, like Roy Williams is a cheater who's going to die soon, and so North Carolina needs a new coach. Like I went into it thinking, okay, well here we go, and yet I read it and I thought it was a pretty, like, it painted a pretty fair picture, accurate picture of what Roy's going through, and with quotes from his friends, and it wasn't even one of these like guy parachutes in to write about college basketball, does the normal, like, you know, just whatever, and didn't understand the story and blah blah blah. This wasn't that. This was well reported, I thought, well presented, obviously well written, because it was written by a talented writer. I don't know why that bothered Roy so much.
Well, I think what their argument was, like, Roy and his friends, I guess that some of his friends told Roy that they were misquoted. I mean, that's what it seemed like to me, at least, when Roy kind of went off on the guy. And I don't know. I would doubt that, given how good of a writer Kent Babb is. And I mean, Norlander apparently knows him well. He can tell us about his meticulous nature.
Yeah, Norlander, if you could, and this is why it's advantageous to have you on this podcast, just a little more detail about the author Kent Babb, like where you guys have hung out, what type of food you put in your mouth while you were doing it.
Yeah, and he's really one of the more respected, talented writers, in my opinion, sports writers out there. So,
just wrote an awesome book on Allen Iverson.
Yeah, and he covers the NFL. Like, to be honest, like, I'm sure the BS he has to deal with on the NFL level compared to college basketball is, you know, it's the worlds apart entirely. But I honestly, my guess is that Roy Williams just doesn't want his friends talking out of school about this. He's insecure with the fact that it's basically openly discussed within college basketball circles about his, you know, when he's going to retire, how much this NCAA investigation has weighed on him. We touched on that on the previous podcast. And so I just don't think that he likes the fact that any of this has become part of North Carolina's story and leading up to the Final Four. But this was always going to happen. This was inevitable. When you are at North Carolina and you are Roy Williams and you're dealing with the NCAA, this is part of it. It'll be interesting to see how today goes. We're recording this, obviously, before the Thursday media availability for North Carolina. I think they're the last ones to go near the end of the day. So if any headlines or quotes come out from Roy or the team, you'll see them closer to the evening than early on. But you just got to take it, man. This was just always part of it, and we suspected this would be the case. I do like that he's given us stuff to talk about and to write about, and maybe he'll do that again later today. But it was going to be it was just going to be inevitable. When you have this much behind you, and sanctions seem inevitable, okay, with the NCAA, obviously people are going to talk about where you are as a coach, what might happen, how this has affected you. And he has every right to get annoyed with it, but, you know, we have every right to write about it and report on it.
How much of an issue do you think it'll be at the press conference? Like, in terms of Roy and Jim also being asked about scandals and academic fraud, like, is that going to be a story coming out of those press conferences? I would assume they're going to be asked about it. And I would assume one of them is going to, if not both, is going to give a colorful quote. That makes sense to you, Sam?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not someone who tends to go to press conferences. I don't know how meaningful they are. It's a lot more beneficial for us, I think, to go to like locker rooms and go to like breakout rooms afterwards and stuff. But I'm sure someone will ask him about it, and it will probably be someone that you kind of mentioned earlier that will be just parachuting into college basketball, so to speak, and will ask Roy or Jim about something ridiculous. And I'm sure that they will not necessarily hold back their feelings on the absurdity.
Yeah, it'll be a story, and it'll be a story from somebody who we like. The question will come from somebody we don't recognize as a familiar face.
Absolutely.
At basketball events. I'm sort of like I've been asked about it. I guess every radio interview I've done between Sunday and now, and like my thing is I think it's a fair thing to point out. It's certainly worth talking about or thinking about. But I don't have anything new to say about it. Like they're old stories that happen to be attached at this moment, so it becomes a new story, or it becomes a fresh story, or it becomes, something that people are gonna. But I don't know what else to say. Like I've written North Carolina columns, I've written Syracuse columns, I don't know what there is new or smart or unique to say about. Syracuse and North Carolina, both dealing with scandals. Here they are in the Final Four.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now I agree.
Yeah. Is it like, I guess they're like, what, is there anything?
To see a whole lot of those though.
Oh, sure we are. Yeah. I just, for me, I don't know what else there is to say about it. And in fact,
I fully agree with you, by the way, I'm just saying we're about to see, and I'm sure all of our listeners are going to see a whole lot of those stories coming out of Media Day on Thursday.
And if anything, and I can't remember if I've said this on the podcast or a radio show or where. But what I find it to be more representative of big time college basketball, big time college athletics than George Mason going to the Final Four or Butler going to the Final Four. I mean, if you just look at the very best, and we've talked about this before, the very best coaches in the sport, the guys who are active Hall of Famers, they've all had issues. And not all, but lots have, right? So like you can go through them very quickly. Jim Boeheim's, everybody knows that. I mean, they're like, he missed 9 games this year. NCAA suspension for rules violations. Larry Brown, Hall of Famer, also missed 9 games this year, rules violations. John Calipari, active Hall of Famer, vacated 2 Final Fours. Rick Pitino, active Hall of Famer, hooker scandal, being investigated right now. Who am I missing? Oh, Krzyzewski, like he's never been hit, but like
yeah, but there was the Lance Thomas stuff
and Corey Maggette.
Getting exactly
like the idea that you have to vacate a Final Four for Marcus Camby, but you don't have to vacate anything for Corey Maggette is just I'll never understand that. You can explain it to me a million times, I'll never understand it. So like the best of the best, they've all like it almost seems, I don't want to say impossible, but unlikely that you can have a long successful career in this sport without also operating outside of the rule book or having your players operate outside of the rule book without your knowledge. North Carolina and Syracuse are in the Final Four. Makes sense to me. What doesn't make sense to me is when somebody like Butler gets there out of the Horizon League, or when George Mason gets there out of the Cologne. That doesn't make sense to me. But this makes perfect sense to me. This is big time college athletics.
You nailed it. I wonder how much that will and should, be part of the story as we lead up to the game, because there's a lot of legitimacy to it. I also think that a lot of fans can grow fatigue of this kind of stuff, because I think ultimately, like, it's something that's like a major part of each program's story and each coach's story. But when we get to the Final Four, they want to, they just want to watch the games. They hope the games are good. A lot of that stuff they don't really care about in the moment. Not that we should ignore it, because I don't think that we should. I just think that sometimes with some of these issues, we can hit saturation points. And they can get really, really old really fast. It's kind of like why with the NFL, like I love watching football, but like it's just constant, storylines that are just banged in your head consistently, and it just gets, it kind of takes some of my joy away from actually following the sport. And I feel like when we get, when we don't have new, like genuine, legitimate news, like imagine if Louisville was not in a postseason ban and made a Final Four this year, how much the hooker story would just be taking over everything. Like, we'd be so sick of it and yet so obligated to write about it. It would honestly, it would kind of take a lot of the joy and the fun away from covering the event, just because, this stuff is, it's kind of our job, but at the same time, it kind of just wears thin.
When you and Kent Babb get together, what do you think you guys are going to talk about this weekend?
I don't think Kent is here. I'm afraid
how disappointed are you?
I'm not that disappointed, I guess. I think I'm going to be able to move on. By the way, this is Parrish's way of not having a segue from what I just talked about, so he's just going to throw some stuff at me. So he'll be like, yeah, I'll go back to the thing with Norlander and Kent Babb. Yeah, that'll fill up some more podcast time. You want to talk about what you were doing late last night, GP?
What was I doing?
I don't know. What were you doing?
I don't remember.
Oh, okay. Well, then I can't even remember.
No, I mean, nothing crazy. Nothing
no,
nutty.
I guess it wasn't too crazy.
No, I was standing there telling stories. That's what I did. I was basically running a podcast late last night at the bar.
You really were. And it is fun. I won't give any names out. But it is cool at the Final Four when you get these coaches, plenty of whom just were in the coaching in the tournament last week and the week before. Because for them, you know, the Final Four is a really cool time for them to reconnect. They're not on the road recruiting like they are in the summer and all that stuff. And specifically at the coach's hotel, you know, they're very loose, and it is cool to see them in that kind of environment. And the Wednesday night one is usually fun because, you know, we haven't gone to the press conference yet. We haven't done any of that stuff. And there were many interesting faces in that lobby last night.
Yeah, well, the way it goes down is at the Final Four, most people come in on Wednesday, but the parties and stuff don't start till Thursday, Friday, right? So tonight, people typically have plans or parties, both. Friday night, everybody has plans, parties, whatever. But on Wednesday night, nobody really makes plans for Wednesday night because it's like, yeah, we get in. And then so people are just sort of drawn to the main hotel, like, lobby, main hotel bar, as it was last night. And so, it was like, you know, not every coach in America, but a whole bunch of them just hanging out last night, tables, bars, whatever. And it's a good place to be. You meet up with people that you haven't seen in a while or talked to in a while. But the storytelling is pretty... You saw last night, the storytelling is really, really good. Like, there's some great storytelling.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, so the Wednesday night at the hotel is always a good time. So listen, I said that we're, as soon as we wrap this up, we're headed over to the Dome for media availability. And one of the things, if you want to touch on a Villanova story that I think I'm working on, is Jay Wright. Because this is a guy, I don't think anybody remembers him not being successful as a coach, because he's, like, consistently been good at Villanova. But the first 3 years, what was that chuckle about, Sam? You remember when Jay Wright sucked?
I am not old enough to remember when Jay Wright sucked.
Okay, this is perfect, right? But here's the deal. He, in his first 3 years at Villanova, missed the NCAA tournament. It was a miss, miss, miss. And in that third year, they had, off the court issues. There was like a phone card scam or some sort of like team, half the team was suspended. I'm overstating all of this, but it was like something. It was a deal. And if we would have been around, even I'm too young to have been around back then for this, but if we would have been around.
Are we sure about that?
Shut up, Sam. If we would have been if we would have been around and we're doing a hot seat list, like the one that had Brian Gregory on it and Dave Rice on it and Travis Ford on it, which is also another interesting thing I'll talk about in a minute. If we would have been doing a hot seat list in that year, heading into Jay Wright's fourth year at Villanova, he would have been on it. If he would have had a bad year in his fourth year, for whatever reason you might, lose a bunch of close games, starting point guard gets hurt, whatever, he really might have been fired at Villanova after four seasons. And instead, they went to the Sweet 16, and it's been... It's I don't want to say it's been dominant. It's been very good, high level college basketball program ever since. But just sort of I don't think it's a lesson that, hey, if you give somebody time, they'll figure it out. Because sometimes you give somebody time, they'll just screw it up, right? But I do think that it underlines just how on the ropes his career might have been. Like, he was one bad year away from maybe getting fired, and I think that's a pretty unique thing to be in that position and then immediately flip it to a point where now you're headed upward and now you've sustained it for, like, you know, 15 years or whatever it is. It's I think I've long believed that once you end up on the hot seat list, you never really get off of it. And yet Jay Wright is probably the best current example of that.
I agree.
I think that you're right. Yeah. No, I think that that's pretty much right. I mean, Jay is, and you know, that was a ridiculous, terrible pun on Jay's name, but like, Jay is become one of the best coaches in college basketball, maybe a future Hall of Famer. I think we talked about that on Monday's podcast, where we think that Jay is probably going to be headed that direction. I mean, he's going to probably end up with 500 wins next year. And if he can pick up this national title this year, that would be a major, major thing in his pocket. So it really is a remarkable kind of turnaround. I mean, like I said, I am too young to remember a time when Jay Wright was on the hot seat and was in trouble for his job. But, you know, I mean, he's been to the NCAA tournament every year but one since 2004, 2005. So it's a good story, I would say. I'm interested to read about a time when Jay Wright was not considered a genius.
Yeah, I'm interested to write it, I think. Okay, Norlander, let's wrap up with this, because I thought this was interesting. As the coaching carousel thing continues to unfold, and I guess the most recent notable news is Travis Ford is the new head coach at St. Louis. There were three guys last year who kept their job, not simply because their school wanted to give them another year, but because their school was the hands were tied because of money, right? The contract just, like, do we really want to buy this guy out? Why not give him another year? Fingers crossed. But there were three guys who got another year. Like, if you could have just torn up their contract, their schools probably would have done it. But they got another year, somewhat because of money, even though there was very little on paper to suggest that the next year was going to be better than the previous one, or at least better enough to make it reasonable to continue forward. And it was Dave Rice at UNLV, Brian Gregory at Georgia Tech, Travis Ford at Oklahoma State. And a year later, really, in Dave's case, less than a year later, they were all fired. And so I found that interesting, because more and more now, we're seeing schools tied to a particular coach for money reasons. Like, they're on a bad contract with cost of attendance stipends or whatever, just for what the money's not there to pay guys to go away. And so you say, okay, like, we'll continue forward and just hope that maybe, you know, it'll be a breakthrough year. Maybe something good will happen. Maybe we won't have to pull the trigger. And in all three cases, the guys, they didn't get it turned around. And like, it's a little bit like what's happening at Memphis right now. Like, Josh Pastner is
a lot like what's happening at Memphis, I think.
It's exactly what's happening at Memphis right now. Josh is getting another year, Josh Pastner, simply because it would cost too much money to make him go away. The university simply does not have the money. And, you know, if you're just looking at recent history, like, odds are that Memphis is going to find itself in the exact same position next year, with a slightly lower buyout, but still having to make a tough decision. I guess I don't really know what the point of all that is, other than to say, when you think your coach is probably headed nowhere, and you think you probably need a change. There's three examples this year that suggest you were probably right initially, and it might not be unwise to just to eat the big number when you need to eat the big number and get on with it, because at least in this particular year at Oklahoma State, UNLV, and Georgia Tech, the miracle that the administration was hoping for, it's not even a miracle, just like, hey, be good enough so we don't have to fire you next year. Like, it didn't work out that way. Is that, I remember Jeremy Foley, the Florida athletic director, one time saying, as soon as you're thinking about firing a coach, you need to go ahead and fire the coach. Because
Tom Crean's a good example of a guy that probably was on the hot seat last year. Probably had that conversation last year.
Yeah, here's what I would say that makes Tom different than the other three. Is that when you looked at Georgia Tech's roster, you didn't think there was anything that made you...
Sure.
Yeah, no, okay, where are they going? They'll be better, but good enough. UNLV, better, but good enough.
UNLV, I'll say this about UNLV. I don't think the question has ever been the talent. I mean, they just got a five-star kid in Steven Zimmerman, a four-star kid that can jump out the gym, and Derek Jones,
right.
That's right.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, I think the UNLV is a case where it seemed like things could be headed in the right direction.
That's fair.
And
that's
they
fair.
Were decidedly not in their, headed in the right direction.
That's fair.
Yeah. So
yeah, I don't disagree with that. I guess my point would be when you looked at Tom's situation at Indiana, and by the way, shout out to Nina Swanson. She sent a shirt. Remember we had the conversation about.
Oh, yeah.
Shout out to Nina.
You can't spell ladder without C-R-E-A-N. She had the shirts made. She sent them to us. I brought them to Houston. I've got your shirts. I've got your Tom.
Can't wait to see these shirts.
I've got your Tom.
I'm thrilled.
I'll bring them to the Dome today. I've got your Tom Crean ladder awesome. Shirts. So thank you to Nina. That was really, really sweet. I guess the difference for Tom would be, when you looked at what he had coming back and what he was enrolling, you saw a preseason top 15 team. Now, obviously, if he would have run it into the ground instead of straight up a ladder, he would have probably been removed. But there was at least something you could look at with Tom Crean and say, yeah, but they're going to be really good next year. So, like, he'll be fine. But with the other guys, there wasn't a whole lot that suggested they're going to be really good next year. And it sort of reminded me of something Jeremy Foley said once. Which is like when you think it's time for a new coach, it almost always is. You know, like it rarely turns itself around in a way that doesn't make you think you shouldn't have pulled the trigger when you did. And perhaps that's the lasting lesson as it is. At Georgia Tech,
here would be my question to you.
Okay,
do you think that Georgia Tech is okay having turned its wheels for a year and not having to pay another year of buyout to Brian Gregory? Do you think that that is worth the expenditure, so to speak, of not having to pay the buyout for a year versus paying?
Well, they clearly decided it was because that's the decision that they made. But
sure.
Like if money's not an issue, and I guess that's the point. Money is an issue.
I was going to say like money is an issue for a lot of teams.
Right. So. I mean, does it do any long-term damage? I don't know, but I don't know, like let's say they hire Jeff Capel and Jeff Capel is going to be the guy to rebuild Georgia Tech. Well, you're a year behind schedule. So it's just a wasted year. If you're okay with the wasted year, then fine, but that's what it is. It ends up being a wasted year. Speaking of, we've only got at this moment two Power 5 jobs open. Remember last year we were all like, or at least I just remember having to look at my phone every second of every minute that I was at the Final Four because of the Shaka Smart news, because Texas and Shaka Smart was going to be a big story. And yet, you know, Georgia Tech, fine, Vanderbilt, whatever. But I don't know that there's like a earth-shattering story that's going to – I think we're mostly done with the earth-shattering stories of the coaching carousel. So that's good news, right?
Yeah, this year it feels like it's more NBA draft-related. Honestly, just because of this new rule.
I can't even get involved. I can't even make myself care about this NBA draft stuff. Every day, 100 people. Transfers and NBA draft. Every day, 100 kids are declaring or transferring. And with the declarations, like, they don't mean anything until somebody signs with an agent. Like, I'm so sick of reading, like, little tweets. So-and-so is declaring for the draft. Will not hire representation. Like, I don't even care.
I agree.
Yeah, but I think it matters, though, at the same time. I think that these guys declaring for the draft and testing their stock is going to be a big deal. Like Ben Bentel declaring for the draft. He's probably a first-team All-American next year if he returns. And, you know, if he's not back, it's going to be interesting. And, you know, today, for instance, is Julian Jacobs is a guy at USC that's really good. It's going to be interesting to see how it affects kids' decision-making process going forward in the way that it affects the college game, because I think you are actually going to see these older players end up not returning. I think it's actually going to have the opposite of the intended effect that coaches are hoping it has. It's not going to be a situation where guys are like, oh yeah, we're happy to turn down money. Like once they hear that the money that's going to be thrown around, I think that they're going to be happy with what they get.
You're exactly right. And that it is going to have an unintended consequence, and it's not going to educate prospects and let them understand the advantages of going back to school. It's going to educate prospects, and it'll show them that, hey, you're probably not going to the NBA, but do you want to make $80,000? You know, you want to make $120,000? And in a lot of the cases, like that's way more money than their parents have ever made, right? So like, Here's what the way I explained it to somebody, and correct me if I'm wrong. It's a little bit like, have you ever gone to a car lot just to look at a car? Like, I'm not going to buy a car today. And you just go there, but you are going to spend all day on car lots. Eventually, you're going to walk out of there with a car, because they're going to just going to frame it in a way that makes perfect sense for you. Like, so what's your car note now? 300. Oh, well, listen, I can get you this brand new car, and it doesn't have any transmission problems that you have in your other car, and we can it's going to be a 428 weeks or months or whatever your payments, but I can get your payment under $250. And so you start going, okay, so I can get a brand new car for less money per month. So I'm actually saving. You'll trick yourself into thinking you're saving money. Oh, this is great. I'm saving money. Bottom line, once you start walking around that car lot, you walk out of there with a car. One time we went to get Kelly a new car, walked out of there with two new cars. Like, I just bought one because I was there. They were like, if you get two at the same time, I was like, cool, let's get two at the same time. Then I walked out of there. I'm like, why did I buy a new car today? Like, but once you walk in that world, it's designed for you to what in the world is going on?
What was that noise?
What was that, Norlander?
I'm just washing my hands real quick, dude.
What's wrong with you?
To be fair, at one point in this podcast, I went up and got some more water. it was during the middle of a GP soliloquy, so I kind of just went for it.
I'm actually surprised that you heard that, because I didn't.
You have a microphone on, so you shouldn't be surprised.
I know, but it was so much louder than I thought it would be.
Gotta hit that mute button.
You gotta hit the mute button, dog.
I love that I threw him off just now. That's so funny.
Sam, if you happen to still be near the computer as I was talking and heard what I said,
I was with my computer. I just was watching my. Just washing my
here's my bottom line. Once these kids get out there and get in the world, and they're not having to deal with English class, and somebody tells them, "Hey, oh, I'm gonna level with you. You're not going to the NBA, but I can get you $80,000 to play in Turkey, tax free, and you don't have to go to class at 9 o'clock in the morning on Monday, Wednesday, Friday." I think some kids are gonna go, "Wow, I didn't even realize that all this was an option."
It's not even Turkey. What's gonna happen is NBA teams are going to have money to throw around this summer. Like, a lot of people don't realize the effect that the rise in the cap is going to have. Like, you're going to go from getting NBA guys who get, $75 to go to camp, or $75,000 to go to camp, like Taron Petaway did last year. That's going to go up to like 100, 125 this year, I think, with guys that are, go undrafted, like Malik Newman, for instance. Malik Newman might not get drafted. I think that, he probably does. But, say that he has a bad draft process and goes undrafted. Some team is still going to be like, all right, Malik's a year off of being like a great prospect. We think he can, really score, even though he only averaged like 10 points a game this year. We're going to take him. We want to get him away from other teams and develop him ourselves in our D League program. We'll give him $125,000 to come to camp, and we'll just kind of cut him at the end of camp, and he'll be in our D League team. So it's, I don't think that a lot of people realize the effect that all of these new rules are going to have, and all of the salary cap rise is going to have. In the decision-making process as far as these NBA kids go. Because, a kid like Julian Jacobs, who, he's probably on the borderline of getting drafted, but by the end of it, he's 22 already. He's going to be able to probably make $75,000 plus D-League wages plus or European wages, whatever you want to call it, and he'll have a shot to go to the NBA one day. This is going to end up going way more poorly for the college game than I think a lot of coaches realize.
I agree. Last question. If these rules would have been in place, say, back around 2000, 9, 10, do we ever get 4 years of Devin Downing?
Oh, man, great question.
Have you thought about that?
I actually have thought about that. I don't think we do. To be honest.
I don't think
And so
did.
Then the course of this podcast has changed forever.
Shout out to Devin Downey. God, that would have been a shame, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I had it in my mind, man. I was seeing how long we could go yet again. So.
Hey, Norlander, what time is Kent Babb coming to pick you up to take you to the Dome?
Let's get this. I got to get over to the Dome and work, man. Let's just wrap this podcast up.
All right, I got
to
go.
All right?
I got to go. Yeah, you want to...
We'll talk again, like, tomorrow. I'll see you in, like, 40 minutes.
Hey, I don't have anything else to say. All right? Unless something wild happens today, I'm out of stuff to say. I don't have anything to say.
We'll figure it out.
Go subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast at iTunes. That's the best way to get your hands on the most recent episodes quickly. So do that, and we'll talk tomorrow. Hopefully something will happen, and we'll have something to say. Bye.